The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
You ready, Josh? All right. Hello, everyone. It's Michelle Woodhouse, and you guessed it, I am not Steve Noble. I have the incredible honor of sitting in for Steve today in the studio full of Star Wars memorabilia. But I'm not Steve Noble, and I don't know much about Star Wars, but I do hopefully bring the cool hair and cool glasses of Steve Noble to the radio show today. I'm so excited to be with you for this hour. We've got quite a lineup. We're going to have Grande with us, who was President Ronald Reagan's executive assistant for a decade, has an incredible book called The President Will See You Now. She's an author and speaker and strong conservative Christian woman. We're really excited to have Peggy joining us in the first segment, and then we're going to talk to senior political correspondent from the Washington Examiner, David Drucker. David has a new book out called In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP, which will be much of what we talk about during the show today. And then we're going to close out with one of my dear friends and a regular guest on the show, former Congressman Mark Walker. And he has a new bus with a new rap, and maybe we'll get Congressman Walker to do a little rapping for us. What do you think? I think that would be fantastic. And he can share with us really what he's doing across the state of North Carolina now. So we're excited for the show, and I am just honestly thrilled to be here. And much of what we're going to talk about today is really faith in the future of the party. I know that so much of what Steve talks about in this room is really our call as Christian warriors to be spreading the gospel, working for Jesus in all that we do. And as we look at our country right now, it doesn't take much time to realize that we really are at a precipice. And it is time for evangelicals to really dig in, time for us to pray and lead and serve and run. I've been on the show a few times with Steve. And just to give you a little background on me, I was the district chair for the Republican Party out in the mountains in the 11th Congressional District and ran for Congress in the most recent primary in May. And while that race for us, we didn't win the race, we really felt like it was our Queen Esther moment. It was a time, and hopefully all political candidates, whether they won or lost in their primary, really see that opportunity as a time to channel their Queen Esther, a time to be called to serve. And we all have opportunities to step in and serve. And this is really what we're faced with right now. I mean, it isn't part of the reason we wanted to have Peggy on the show, and I can't wait to really talk to her about her time with President Reagan, is looking at that city on the hill. And for those of us who are old enough to remember when President Reagan ran, our country was sitting in much the same place it is right now when Jimmy Carter was president, and record high inflation, international instability, domestic problems. And Ronald Reagan never talked about the malaise. He didn't talk about the difficulties that Americans were facing. He gave incredible hope. And that is what I think we're all looking for right now from our elected officials, what we're looking for from our church leaders. Since I was last in the studio with Steve, we had the Roe v. Wade decision from the Supreme Court, which is so incredible for our country and so incredible for our future. And this is a time when we have to dig down and find that hope and inspiration that will lead each of us to do what we can, because it is a time of challenge and darkness out there. But we each have been called for such a time as this, and this is our time as evangelicals, because as we look into 2022 and on to 2024, evangelicals will be a voting bloc that has tremendous influence, if not the most important influence, in the outcome of our elections, both at the state, local level, and nationally. This is not a time for us to stay home. When we look at coming out of a primary, it was probably one of the most challenging primaries I've ever experienced. Maybe that's because I was smack dab in the middle of it. But what we did see in that primary was a lot of division. And it's hard to come out of those battles and get refocused on what needs to happen. And what needs to happen is we need to make sure, as strong conservative Christians, that we are electing those of like mind to serve us. And that is from your most local level, city council, county commissioner, school board, all the way to Washington, D.C. And it's important for us to really look at the quality of candidates that we're putting forward to make sure that we have elected officials who are going to stand firmly on the word, and they are going to do the things that we want them to do when we put them into office. One of the greatest gifts, I always said this as a candidate, that anyone could give you is their vote. It is the most incredible gift that anyone can give you, and it is an incredible honor, and each and every one of those votes is so critically important. And I hope our elected officials really are listening to their constituents and recognizing how important it is to hear what we are saying. And what we are saying is we want you to step in and be strong and be bold, and because they have been called for such a time as this, and we need boldness. And I will tell you, every day I get up and I look at the news and turn on Fox, as many people do, and read my digital newspapers, quite a few of them, and really try to dig into what's happening and pray over our leaders. And today was no different than many days where I wake up and say, thank you, Lord, for Joe Manchin. Because in Washington, D.C., he is the man right now who is standing between the progressives destroying our country and the true American dream. So we're grateful for him. And even for those that you don't agree with politically, I hope you are taking the time to really pray for them and pray over them, because that is what we are called to do. And some are easier than others. Let's face it. We're not called to like them, I guess. And thank goodness that that wasn't put in the Bible. So we're going to keep fighting and get ready. This is Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble on a great Friday. Get ready. We are going to move into our next segment. And talk a little bit more about that city on the hill that we're all looking to create. Really looking forward to getting started again. It's Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble. Hi, this is Michelle Woodhouse. I'm filling in for Steve Noble today, Friday, and so excited to be here. Really looking forward to bringing on our first guest, Peggy Grande. She served as the executive assistant for President Ronald Reagan for over a decade. Incredible author, speaker, commentator, and has a great book called The President Will See You Now. And we're so excited to bring Peggy on the show. Peggy, are you there?
I am.
Hi, how are you? Well, we are so grateful to have you on.
It is my pleasure.
Well, thank you, thank you. And for full transparency, Peggy is a dear friend of mine and Eddie's, and just such a blessing. So thank you for joining us. You're in California today?
I'm actually in Washington, D.C. today.
Oh, all right. Well, good. Well, then we didn't have to worry about the time zone. So we're so glad that you're we're so glad that you're here. Of course, we could spend an entire show with you sharing incredible stories about your time with President Reagan. But, you know, one of the things we've been talking about before he came on was he was such an inspiration when he would talk about the city on the hill. And as you look at where we are right now as a country, what do you think Ronald Reagan would say to Americans today?
Well, thank you for having me on, and thank you for all you continue to do to champion the values and the principles that not only Reagan stood for, but I think that so many Americans stand for today. And there's there's not enough voices out there that we see and hear that are echoing the things that are really important to the American people. So thank you for doing your part in that. You know, I would never pretend to put words into Ronald Reagan's mouth. He was the great communicator, but his words stand the test of time. And I think that the principles in the heart of the man extended into all of us. And so all of us who continue to be stewards of the legacy he left in us, we believe like he did that we the people tell the government what to do, not the other way around. We the people still are the true holders of power in this nation and need to be boldly and unapologetically exercising that. But Ronald Reagan had this beautiful way of having a strength and success, obviously, without having kind of a rough hardness or an edge to him. He was strong and successful, but he was also warm and charismatic, and he just had this beautiful blend of both. And I think that came so much from his faith and just feeling confident in the fact that he was doing exactly what God had put him on earth to do. And if you were doing the same thing, then we were all equal in God's eyes and in his. And so he just had this wonderful way about him. The strength also couched with a beautiful humanity that I got to see up close the 10 years that I worked for him.
Well, that is, when I listen to that and I think about, you know, that warmth and charisma that he had, and it really was about we the people and speaking boldly. I mean, and he did it in a way that was such an inspiration to anyone who heard him, and going back, and he had a great sense of humor, didn't he?
He did. He just had a way of bringing people around to his point of view. He was a great listener, so he would listen to others. But whether it was self-deprecating humor he would use to make sometimes a very important point, he had a way of framing things in a way that was beautiful, that was magnetic. It made people want to follow him. It wasn't this threat or this pressure that they had to agree with him, but he painted a picture, that shining city on the hill, saying, America's best days are ahead. It's morning in America. He painted this vision of something different and better that we could all aspire to and that we were going to do together. And so we never felt like he was lecturing us or preaching at us or speaking down to us. He created a vision that we wanted to be part of. And I don't know about you, but I feel like every time he looked through the lens of the camera from the Oval Office and came into my living room, I thought he was talking just to me. So we all felt that call to action, and we felt like it was collective, and we were going to follow him and join him in something that was going to take us as a nation to a better place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble, and I've got Peggy Grande on with me, former assistant to President Ronald Reagan and author of The President Will See You Now. And so, Peggy, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, because I know you are boldly working in really spreading the conservative message.
Well, I certainly try. And again, I just like Ronald Reagan, I try to do good in the places that I've been called to serve. And I feel so blessed to have so many opportunities to participate in what's happening, not only here nationally, but internationally. My time is split in many different ways. I don't know how much time you have, but I'm currently working with the White House Historical Association, which does great work educating people about the occupants and the people that lived in the White House, and provides support financially for maintaining the White House to the museum standard that Jackie Kennedy envisioned back in 1961. I also do a weekly television show in Australia. So I'm the U.S. reporter, I guess you could call it, for Australian TV, giving them a window into what they hear may not be the whole story and what they should be paying attention to that they may not be hearing. I continue to do speaking in a lot of Reagan-related places. I did a replaying on the occasion of Ronald Reagan's anniversary of his passing at his alma mater. I just spoke actually earlier today for Young America's Foundation. They were hosting a conference called Victims of Socialism. I talked about Reagan and his lifelong fight against communism. I continue to write and speak and exercise my voice and my opinion, and hopefully echo and amplify the messages that Ronald Reagan embedded in us for so many years, and infuse it with that optimism, that patriotism, that love of country, and a really genuine respect and love for each other. But do it in a way that hopefully is strong and unapologetic, but also civil. we say we want civility in our dialogue, but we need to be modeling it. So that's always my goal in everything that I do.
Absolutely. Well, so share with us maybe one of your favorite stories from the book, The President Will See You Now. I've heard many, but I would love to hear one of your favorites.
Well, let me just say for anybody who's listening, you know, this is not a political book. It's not a policy
right.
book. It's really a character sketch of a man that I had an opportunity to see firsthand and work for 10 years. And so that front row seat that you got to not only what he did, but who he was, it's almost like I put on glasses and you get to see him in the way that I saw him. And so I encourage anybody who's interested in knowing more about the man to pick up the book, because I think it's a unique view, especially in the later years of his life. You know, I'll share one quick story that I shared today, because I was speaking at the Victims of Socialism conference, and I talk about this elderly Romanian woman who came into the office one day. She had written to the president and asked for an opportunity to meet him. She walks into his office. She takes one look at him. She drops to his feet and starts sobbing and kissing mm-hmm. his feet. And Ronald Reagan reaches down and brings her up to stand, and with tears streaming down her face, she looks up at him, and in very broken English, she thanks him for her freedom and the freedom of her family and the freedom of her people. And, you know, I watched this moment, and I thought of all the people around the world who, if they had had the opportunity, would have also traced the dust of their freedom back to the feet of this man and thanked him for what he did to advocate for them. He was a voice for the voiceless. He brought power and strength to those who were powerless. And so that's just one example of many of witnessing firsthand the power, the strength, and the graciousness of this great leader and man.
That is so great. Peggy, thank you so much for joining us. People can find you at peggygrande.com. And we're so grateful. Keep up the great... to bring our second guest up here in just a second. Am I good? All right. Hello, this is Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble today, Friday. So excited to be here in the studio, and we are about to bring on our second guest. I am so excited to bring on my friend David Drucker, senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, author of the new book, In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP, and fellow foodie. David, are you on with us? David, can you hear me?
I can.
There you are. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. Again, Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble on Friday. I've got David Drucker with me, senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, author of the new book, In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP, and fellow foodie. David was in Asheville when I was running for Congress, and we had a great meeting. And, of course, I think we spent a good chunk of it, beside talking about politics, talking about all the great places to eat in Western North Carolina. So thank you for making time to be on the show.
Good to be here. You caught me just before my next snack.
Oh, well, good. What are you having?
I think we've cut up some heirloom tomatoes, some mozzarella, and I think we have some basil. I know we have some different cheeses, so.
All right.
Just
another
Friday.
There we go. I love it. Yeah, that's a very fancy snack. You know, you're kind of bougie over there, David. That's very, very fancy. You know, I think I have a protein ball in the freezer here in the studio that started to melt in my car, but I'm going to get to it. I'll get to it later. So we're so grateful to have you on. And I just have to say, I want to hear so much about the book and really what you think the future of the GOP is going into this battle, not only in 24, but even what are we doing in November 2022? We're 115 days out from the election. So tell us about the book and what you see as the future for the GOP.
Yeah, well, look, what I try to do with In Trump's Shadow is write about the future. There are a lot of great books out there that recount the past 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, and I think they're really, really excellent. I try to look ahead and take a look at Donald Trump's impact on the Republican Party. And I really think, you know, from my reporting and the conclusion I drew, which is, I don't think rocket science, but I really think, you know, Donald Trump represented a generational break with the Ronald Reagan era of Republican politics. And he created new expectations from Republican voters, new policy expectations, new stylistic expectations in terms of what kinds of leaders Republicans are looking for, what they think can be effective versus what they used to think could be effective. And I think that's going to have a huge impact on how the 2024 presidential primary unfolds. It appears as though Donald Trump will be a part of that primary, but I think that the rule holds in that, you know, for most of our lives, Michelle, we saw Republicans running for president every 4 years, promising to be the next Ronald Reagan. And I think that, you know, what we're going to see in 2024 is candidates in some form or another promising to be the next Donald Trump. Obviously, Trump doesn't have to work too hard to do that. And other Republicans that will run, even if he runs, and they will run, will try and go at him from different angles. But I don't think the angle is going to be we need to go back to the way things used to be, or we don't need to fight as hard, or we need a different position on trade. You know, there are certain things where I think he has set the bar, and I think what the case is going to be made is that we need to take the best of Trump but do it more effectively. And we'll see how Republican primary voters react to that, but there could be a case to make. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest conclusions that I drew in the book, and then I kind of lay out who represents what part of the party, what they have been doing to prepare for a campaign, some of these sort of intra-party battles going on between prospective candidates, and then a lot about Trump and his thinking and how he approached his political campaigns and how he might approach the next one. So that's where we are in 24. Obviously, 2022 comes first. I think one way or the other, Republicans are going to have a very good election day. I think the question is, how good can it be and how good will it be?
Yeah, absolutely. This is Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble today, and I've got David Drucker on with me, senior political correspondent for the Washington Examiner and author of the new book, In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024 and the Future of the GOP. So let's unpack a little bit about that, because I think you hit on so many great things. I mean, there are factions within the Republican Party, and I can tell you, coming out of a pretty bloody primary myself, and kind of a bit of a bloody primary here in North Carolina statewide, we saw it in the Senate race, the congressional primaries, kind of across the board. You really saw those segments within the party. And, you know, one of the things that I think people are looking at right now is, yeah, we're going to have a red wave, but what does that look like, right? How red is that? What does that look like? But I also think, you know, I want to hear whether it's Trumpism or Ronald Reagan, the shining city on the hill, making America great again. Right now, there's just too much messaging, I think, coming out of the party of Joe Biden is a failure. And that doesn't inspire the voter to get out. So what do you think the message needs to be from the Republican Party going into 2022 to get voters inspired and to give them hope for the future going into the 2022 races?
Yeah, well, this is always, you know, a bit of a song and dance, because you have to do both.
Right.
You have to make the case against the incumbent, or in this case, the incumbent party, and obviously different congressional candidates, gubernatorial candidates, will make a case against the incumbent party, saying my opponent is a representative of that president who you don't like. He or she does everything that president asked for. You don't like him, therefore you're not going to like this person, or you shouldn't like this person. Right? So, good. I mean, I don't have to tell you this, but you both make a case against the incumbent, against your opponent, and then you make a case for how you're going to fix things, or at least address problems.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, in a midterm election scenario, I am of the belief that you don't have to do as much proactive messaging as you do just highlighting what people already feel about the incumbent when we're in an environment like this. When the incumbent president is below 40% in job approval, which Joe Biden now is across the board on average, and when he is particularly not doing well in the states, and when voters are focused on things like inflation and gas prices, where they don't feel in particular that the president and his party are doing a good job, you kind of want to just get out of the way and let voters go to the polls and put the brakes on it. And that's what they're sort of poised to do.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the polls to register the only vote of disapproval they have. And what they're, and voters are pretty smart about this. They know that one person in one congressional district, or even if Republicans win the House or the Senate, you can't change things overnight and you can't get past a president's veto pen. But
right.
they can send a message that they're unhappy. And then I think the question is, what do Republicans do with that? And what I have found over the past 10, 12, 15 years or so, just to get to your point about inspiration and having an agenda, to answer that is that Democratic and Republican waves have continuously been misinterpreted by the winners. Right? So there's a big Democratic wave, and all of a sudden Democrats try to do everything they ever thought they wanted to do. And voters say, that's not what we wanted. We just wanted less of the other guy. And Republicans win in a big wave. They try and do everything they ever set out to do. And voters go, that's not what we wanted. We just didn't want so much of what the other guy was doing. That's one of the reasons Joe Biden is in trouble. That's one of the reasons Trump and the Republicans got into trouble in 2018. And so it'll be interesting to see how House and Senate Republicans, if they're in the majority in January, read the election, what they set out to do, and whether or not they're willing to work with a Democratic president to do what they can do. Also, whether he's willing to work with them. But what I've seen from wave elections is that the parties constantly misread them, thinking they have a mandate, when all the voters did was go to the polls and say, stop.
Yes.
Right now.
Right.
And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's such a, I mean, you've been covering this for so long, and it really is people saying, wait, stop the madness on this side. And we're going to give the keys to that side, but we don't want you to drive us off a cliff either. So, stay in the lane and get good work done, get good work done for people. So, Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble on with David Drucker. David, as we wrap up here, we've got about 30 seconds. Tell me a little bit. What races are you really keeping your eye on across the country?
Well, I'm keeping an eye on the Georgia and Arizona Senate races. I'm keeping an eye on House races in Michigan and Virginia. That'll tell us a lot about what Election Day looks like.
Absolutely. Well, David Drucker, thank you so much for being on. The book is called In Trump's Shadow, The Battle for 2024, The Future of the GOP. You can find it at Amazon.com. I ordered a copy. I'll be sending it to you for an autograph. And enjoy the heirloom tomatoes, David. And so we're really enjoying our first guest hosting with Steve here. So this is great fun. Ready? Hello, it's Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble on a Friday afternoon. And I love that music. Love a little Bob Seger. I know my parents, I think, are watching on Facebook Live, but we are native Detroiters, the home of Bob Seger, and my dad many years ago helped work security for Seger when he was still playing bowling alleys and KFC halls. A great concert, a great show, and we love some Bob Seger. So thank you for that lead-in music. Again, Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble. We're going to wrap up the show, our final segment, with my dear friend, Congressman Mark Walker. Congressman Walker, are you with us?
I certainly am, Michelle. Oh. I was just listening to you there. I don't know Bob Seger, but I did get a chance to meet Adrian Rogers, the guy that was kind of giving that word on prayer, one of the great prince of preachers in the 20th century. Can't believe he's been gone for 17 years, but congratulations. You're doing a great job today.
Well, thank you so much. And I mean, what an honor to fill in for Steve. I just keep reminding people that if they're tuning in, I'm not Steve Noble. Our hair is a little similar, different color. But I'm in a studio full of Star Wars figurines, and I don't know anything at all about Star Wars. But what a great way to spend a Friday talking to incredible conservatives. And we get to close out the show with you. So this is just for our listeners. This is going to be me and my dear friend, Congressman Mark Walker, just chatting. So we're so glad that people are tuning in to listen. Thank you so much for always being such an incredible conservative faith warrior. What you do for this state and for our country is truly inspirational and incredible. And many people probably don't know what you do because you do it so gracefully. You do it with such humility and dignity. And I am just so honored to have you and Kelly as friends. Just so thank you so much. And just super honored to have you on. And I want to hear about the new bus because you are you have a new rap. And I did tease it out earlier in the show. You might do some rapping, so no pressure. But tell us about the new bus and the literal and figurative movement that's going on with you.
Yeah. So a couple of days after this last primary, we knew that we had to stay engaged because there's this is for anybody that's looking to run for elected office, and this is one of the really the barometers as far as to me who is in it for the attention and who is in it about the cause. And we knew that and know that right now there are six statewide judicial races that are crucial: two North Carolina Supreme Court races with Trey Allen and Richard Dietz, and then four North Carolina Court of Appeals. So what we decided to do with the little money that we had left over in our campaign, we decided to begin the process of wrapping the bus and getting out on the road with it and making sure that people are aware that North Carolina has a Democrat-led court, Supreme Court, that is, four Democrats and three Republicans, and we have a chance in just 4 months, a little less than 4 months, to flip it to 5-2. And I just want people to be aware of that. We've also launched a new website as well as a new pack called WinTheCourts.com. Bought the website, the domain there. We are putting some money toward these guys. We've got a great big pastors and faith leaders event. We also have something we're planning, and I'll wrap up this part of it with this, Michelle. We're planning for a big event, a big banquet, Minorities for Conservative Justices. That's coming in late September, early October. So a lot of things on the docket. We're excited about being a part of this.
That is incredible. WinTheCourts.com. Great, critically important. And I don't know that any of us realized how important the courts were until we got into this redistricting situation and we started to see the impact and the influence on the courts. This is Michelle Woodhouse. I'm filling in for Steve Noble today, Friday. I've got Congressman Mark Walker on with me to wrap up the show. And so, Congressman Walker, tell us just what drew you to get to move into this incredible battle to win the courts. And then if you could share a little insight into why these races, these statewide races, are so critically important. Because you and I both know we often hear people say, well, I know who I'm going to vote for governor. I know who I'm going to vote for Senate. I know who I want to vote for to be my congressman. But the judicial races, I don't know. I don't know who they are. And I think this is where so many voters are unsure of how critically important these judicial races are. So tell us what drew you into it and why it's so critically important to the voter to be engaged in these races.
Yeah, and it's not to make it too personal, but the interesting part of it, we arrived in Congress in January 2015, had a chance to become chairman of the RSC, led that effort in repealing the Obamacare and defunding Planned Parenthood. Some of the things there where we just hit the ground running. Eric Holder's group came in and sued our state over the congressional line. This went on for two or three different cycles. Ultimately, the North Carolina Supreme Court appointed a couple of people, overrode the will of the people, much like they did voter ID a few years ago, and decided that they would draw the congressional districts, not allowing the state representatives, who the people duly elected, even overriding our state constitution. Now, the exciting thing is that the Supreme Court has said that they're going to take up this case later in the year. But the risky thing is that sometimes you don't know how these judicial races will go. And the left, for years, what they couldn't get done legislatively, they have been able to do so with judicial activism. That's why these courts are so important, whether it's the Court of Appeals or the North Carolina Supreme Court. Having a Republican majority allows the people in North Carolina to make the decisions on these very important issues.
And voter ID, we voted overwhelmingly across the state of North Carolina to put that in place. And I can tell you, and I know you know this, and anyone who's ever worked the polls sees it, and as a candidate you see it when you're out there working the polls on early voting and election day, how many people walk in, they've got their sample ballot in one hand and they've got their driver's license in the other hand, because so many voters assume they need that ID. And we saw, having a liberal Supreme Court in the state of North Carolina, that they could they were able to use that judicial branch to erase the will of the people.
Yes, and this is going to be, I think, a huge momentum year for Republicans, because the people of North Carolina and throughout America are tired of this woke ideology that's permeated in so many different arenas, including the judicial arena. And I think this is going to give us a real opportunity, and I hope that conservatives are voting down the ballot. Look, we've got some good races. We need to win this U.S. Senate race with Ted Budd. We've got some other local races that are important, but we cannot take our eye off the ball. This is a chance to strip the Democrats from having the ability to usurp the will of the people here in North Carolina. And that's why we're wanting to get behind this and to put some time and energy and resources, and we're looking forward to the event that we're planning.
Absolutely. Again, Michelle Woodhouse filling in for Steve Noble, and I've got Congressman Mark Walker on with me today talking about his new pack, and incredible message around winning the courts. You can find out more information about it at winthecourts.com. And for listeners to know, we're going into the 2022 November election. I think we're 115 days out from that election, and the opportunity to flip the North Carolina Supreme Court. We've got, I know, listeners from other states, and the judicial races are critically important, whether they are partisan like we have them here, or in other states where they're not. It's so critically important as a voter that you are educated on the judicial races, because what we have seen happen both nationally and at the state level is Democrats will use the bench to legislate when they don't get what they want in the state house or from their legislators. And this, what you're doing, Congressman Walker, is so critically important to making sure that we have strong conservatives. I was sharing with David Drucker before he came on, as we talked about his about President Trump. I really do think and that President Trump's legacy will be the three Supreme Court justices that he was able to seat during his term, because that did shift the power in the U.S. Supreme Court. And it doesn't take long for Americans to see how critically important those three Supreme Court justices are, especially when Joe Biden gets one on and she can't tell us what a woman is.
Well, there's no question about that. I agree with you 100%. That's his legacy. And remember, these aren't every other year, even in North Carolina. These are longer terms than even our U.S. Senate races, and that's why it's so important to get this right, to make sure that we are getting out there that the right justices, and we've got six great candidates that are running, and you can find more information. In fact, you can get the bio. If you want more information, you can get the bio on exactly who's running for the Supreme Court and who the four judges for Court of Appeals there on that website, Win the Courts.
That's fantastic. So one of the things that we've been talking about today, and I'm going to ask your thoughts and opinion. You spent so much time in Washington, D.C., serving the people of the United States, serving your congressional district here in North Carolina. We had an opportunity to start the session talking to Peggy Grande, who was Ronald Reagan's executive assistant for a decade, about that shining city on the hill. So, Congressman Walker, what do we say to people right now who are feeling so broken, who are feeling so concerned about the state of our country, the failures of the Biden administration? What are some words of inspiration that you would give to them?
Let's keep our eyes on the Lord, and let's get out there and fight and do so and still love our neighbors.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being with me. Thank you for the fight that you continue to fight. Thank you for your faith walk. You're such an inspiration to me. Congressman Mark Walker, the website is winthecourts.com. Six critical races on our North Carolina ballot in November, 115 days until Election Day. It's hard to believe, and it's absolutely keeping our eye on the Lord, and knowing that as Christians, we are called to make sure that we are voting the will of the Lord.
And another program powered by the Truth Network.